You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Hello, welcome please to Telstra Customer Service. How may I be helping you?
Conform or be consumed.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history.
I heard a rumour today.
I like your rumours.
I know, as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
What is your environmental policy?
To sell Telstra.
You heard of road rage?
Yes.
What about web rage?
And within a few minutes.
Minutes?
Yeah, minutes. It's not minutes. Next year, mate.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. I was somewhat saddened to hear that Qantas has received the approval of the Australian Communications and Media Authority for trials of mobile telecommunications on commercial aircraft. So is this the beginning of a new torture campaign being waged by the airline industry to unsuspecting travellers, or a new option for ticketing where you can pay a surcharge to be in a mobile phone-free area within the aircraft? Instead of smoking or non-smoking, the torment of a new era of aviation could be cell phone or no cell phone. The approval is for a trial period of up to 12 months involving a single Boeing 767 and will be limited to domestic flights. Qantas will initially conduct a three-month trial and will only enable email and SMS services. So now we'll have to put up with the cacophony of stupid chirping sounds emanating from all parts of the aircraft as we try and catch a quick snooze while flying. The good news, if there is some, international roaming charges will be applied, but I'm sure that won't be too much of a deterrent. In addition to mobile devices, laptops equipped with GPRS modems will be usable in flight, but only for email. That's port 25 and 110 by the sounds of it, and no port 80. A voice trial may be conducted if the initial tests go well, but users will need deep pockets to cope with the high cost of international roaming. A network control unit connects the onboard 1800 MHz picocell to ground-based networks via satellites. And before you ask, the picocell will restrict mobile devices' power output to a level that will not cause interference with the plane's avionics. Mobile access will be under the control of the cabin crew, who will be able to vary the service according to operational requirements. For example, they could block all communications while continuing to manage the power output of active devices.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
More on in-flight mobile access. Dell backflips on Windows XP. Telstra releases a new Express mobile card for NextG. Arrests over Wi-Fi piggybacking. Copyright laws on the web. And Adam Turner looks at Channel 10's Big Brother and what you can see on mobile phones this year. All that and more on Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio. But first, let's find out what's been making news in the tech world this week.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Dell backflips on Windows XP, broadband hanging on, arrests over Wi-Fi piggybacking, and copyright laws tested on the World Wide Web. Welcome to Tech Talk News. The G9 group of telecom companies has taken the next step in building a national fibre-to-the-node network, formally lodging draft details of its plan with the competition regulator. In a draft special access undertaking lodged with the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, the group has proposed a fibre access node operating company that would provide a range of different wholesale broadband products. As previously revealed by the G9, a group known as SpeedReach would operate and manage the network on behalf of FANUC. No carrier would be allowed to control SpeedReach, and companies seeking access to the network, including G9's arch foe Telstra, would be entitled to join SpeedReach as a member. A statement issued by the G9 said the undertaking would set initial prices for access and provide a formula for setting prices over the next 3 years. The undertaking itself would last for 12 years. Dell will once again let home PC buyers choose between Microsoft's Windows Vista and Windows XP when they purchase new machines. Dell, like many computer makers, stopped offering XP on most home desktops and laptops soon after Vista launched at the end of January. By late March, the company said only two models aimed at home users would be configured with XP. The option still existed on many models for business users. But on Dell's IdeaStorm website, where visitors can post suggestions for the company and vote on the ones they think are important, a plea titled "Don't Eliminate XP Just Yet" racked up more than 10,700 votes. Dell said in a web post last Thursday that it heard loud and clear what consumers were wanting. The company said it would immediately offer XP again as an option for four models of its Inspiron notebooks and two models of its Dimension desktop PCs. This comes just weeks after Dell said it was also planning to offer PCs with Linux. Telstra Chief Executive Sol Trujillo said talks with the federal government about reviving its planned $4 billion high-speed broadband network are no closer to agreement. But Mr. Trujillo said whether the network went ahead or not, Australia's number one telecoms company would still compete strongly and win market share. He said we've been having lots of conversations for a period of time, and he said that they were no closer as far as he was concerned. Telstra scrapped plans for the fibre to the node network last year after a standoff with the competition regulator over prices it could charge rivals to use the technology. The company argued as the network was being built with shareholders' funds, investors should not be disadvantaged by regulatory issues. Telstra has been in talks with the government on revisiting plans for the fibre optic network after media bosses James Packer and Rupert Murdoch criticised broadband speeds in Australia. Members of the rival group G9 Telcos, led by Optus, have proposed building their own network and are also in talks with the government and Australian Competition and Consumer Commission. Asked if a change of government might aid the agreement, Mr. Trujillo said that he hoped all political parties would view high-speed broadband as important. British police said two people have been arrested and cautioned for using someone else's wireless internet connection without permission. The practice which sharply divides internet users has been fueled by the rapid growth of fast wireless broadband in homes and people's failure to secure their wireless networks. Last week, a man was arrested after neighbours spotted him sitting in a car outside a home in Redditch, Worcester, using a laptop computer to browse the internet. A 29-year-old woman was also arrested in a car in a similar incident in the same area the previous month. Both received an official caution, a formal warning one step short of prosecution for dishonestly obtaining electronic communication services with intent to avoid payment. They were among the first to be arrested for piggybacking in Britain. Gregory Straswicks from West London was the first person to be convicted of the offence in 2005. He was fined £500 and given a 12-month conditional discharge. And finally, copyright lawyers are closely watching the breach of copyright case brought by Telstra against the Premier Media Group. The case has raised interesting issues about the fair dealing provisions of the Copyright Act and the way in which internet is continuing to raise new interpretations of old laws. Telstra is suing Premier Media Group and News Digital Media in the federal court over NRL highlights footage being screened on the Fox Sports News website and being provided to mobile phone providers. This week, Judge James Allsop knocked Telstra back in its bid to prevent Fox Sports from limiting the amount of footage it could show, pending a final hearing. Justice Allsop said he did not have to make his decision by considering whether the internet was a different category to the television broadcasting arena, but that the issue could come up at the hearing. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Apple delays Leopard, the next operating system for the Apple computer.
Yes, having made such a big deal about the release of Vista and how long delayed it was.
Yeah. Well, I don't think you should buy an appliance without Ethernet in it. My next toaster is going to have Ethernet.
I haven't understood for ages why video recorders haven't had an Ethernet port in the back so you can program it with a web browser.
Now, Juster's going to... It's TV on demand for your broadband. Interesting concept.
In the UK, people are running out to get set-top boxes. Yeah, they can't get them quick enough.
From 4 to 24 channels.
Because they get all the extra channels.
11 meg in about a minute. That's pretty fast.
An unexplained error has occurred.
Oh, I hate the host.
Yeah. If we stuff this up, which is potentially on the cards, it's going to affect us. What's it going to cost in the future when everybody else is running 100 megabits and we've got 12?
Yeah, exactly. If Koonin caves in and lets Telstra do what they want on their terms, for the next 30 years we're going to be at Telstra's mercy again. Nothing will change unless we break that grip of one company on the whole box and die.
Entertaining, informative, independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Showtime.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio for yet another week. I'm Andrew McComb, your host, and sitting across the panel from me today,
a doctor in his own right. Good evening, Dr. Ron. How are you this evening?
I am in my own right, and I'm very well, thanks, Andrew. It's great to be back, and what a fantastic show last week with Adam Turner.
Were you here? Terrific. Where were you? Sorry, where's the excuse?
I left my notes. The dog ate my notes.
Yeah, okay, good.
Yeah, but it was fantastic to listen to. He had some great stuff to say.
Yeah, it was good. Actually, Adam's becoming somewhat of a regular on the program now. You'll actually notice on the website there's a view from a couch.
More so than me, perhaps, but that wouldn't be hard, would it, these days?
No, I just wondering where your loyalties lie, just to be quite honest.
No, I'm not defecting. If I'm not here, it's for a good reason, you know that.
I do, yes. I do. And Mark joins us this evening. We haven't seen Mark for about 2 or 3 weeks, I think it's been
about 3 weeks with Easter. And,
that's right.
So, g'day, Dr. Ron.
How you doing, Andrew? Mark? Good to see you.
What's news? Anything exciting happening?
Got a hard disk drive and DVD recorder on the weekend.
Like a personal video recorder.
A personal video recorder, yeah. They don't call that in the company I bought, but yeah, it's basically that sort of thing.
What model is it, Mark?
LG.
Life's good.
Yep. Lucky Gold Star.
Is it good? Lucky Gold Star.
Yeah, that's the real name of the company. Yeah. Life's good. That's just a marketing thing. Don't
believe
that hype.
It's superficial technological waffle.
Just getting into it now. So I've programmed the channels and started with moving some home movies from VHS to DVD. So we can keep them a bit longer than VHS.
The novelty wears off after you've done about 20 or 30 of those.
Yeah, exactly. So
I don't know how many you're up to. I'm up to about 45 on the collection.
I really only did one tonight to see if it worked and what the quality would be like.
The quality's good. You're going Firewire in, Firewire out?
Nothing like that. I've got a VHS cassette that I've transferred them to 10 years ago, and I'm trying to put them on DVD, so if that tape ever goes, you know, I've got another copy of it somewhere.
VHS, there's a format, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
We've still got stuff on Super 8 that I have to get onto something else.
Something, yeah.
I've been meaning to get onto VHS for 15 years, but...
You've bypassed that technology. You just move into the... In fact, go straight to Blu-ray.
I missed an entire generation of technology.
Well, miss DVD as well. Go straight to Blu-ray.
Shouldn't I?
Go to just phase out DVD, phase out VHS. Hit the new stuff.
Super 8 to Blu-ray.
So I think
good luck with that, Dr. Ron.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, good.
So it's brought a few new features in. I think it's got an analog and a digital, and the digital's a standard definition. So it'll bring me some picture-in-picture ability as well, which will be good.
PIP.
So I'm looking forward to that on the occasion. Yep.
Picture-in-picture is quite handy, especially when you're waiting for something to come on, because the TV stations just delay. No such thing as a guide these days. It's more like a guess when it comes to TV channels.
They don't fill the data on them, what's coming on next and that sort of thing.
Adam was talking about last week. A bit of a conspiracy theory, really, isn't it?
I hate that.
Anyway, there's some interesting gossip around this week, not in the rundown, which I've just sort of discovered today. Did you know that China shuts down fake Olympic sites? Because, you know, the Olympics are in China.
Right.
And China is one of the greatest plagiarising countries in the world.
They're having trouble with their own plagiarising.
They are. But they've actually decided to do the right thing in this instance and actually shut down a few sites. Police have arrested 3 men for setting up fake Olympic Games ticket sites.
Oh.
Buy your fake tickets here in Beijing. And
enter your Visa card number and click submit.
Potentially.
But this time it's costing the Chinese money rather than some other country.
It's costing them their reputation, I think, which is probably more the point.
Well, the reputation is to plagiarise, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. It is. Hardware failure kills Optus Mobile. How about this? If you were in Melbourne last Saturday between 11 p.m. and 9 a.m. the Sunday morning, you worked that out. What's that, about 10 hours?
10 hours or so.
Yep. No Optus Mobile coverage on 2G or 3G.
Ouch.
In the 15-kilometre radius of Melbourne.
Would never happen on a Telstra network, would it, Mark?
Except for the last time they let the batteries go completely flat.
Except the last time it happened.
I figure someone desperately tripped over the extension lead on that one. And, of course, as per normal, they just blame somebody else because that's what it is. It wasn't us.
What happened with it, Andrew? What was the reason?
Who was them?
The vendor.
The vendor.
And they're not naming the vendor. No, it wasn't our problem. It was the vendor's problem.
So they're saying that somebody who they buy... bandwidth from, or they buy a carrier service from.
I think it's hardware.
Buy the hardware from, maybe.
Yeah. Hardware, okay.
Mm. Yeah, something serious fell over as a result, took out one of those capital cities.
Didn't they blame the vendor last time that you could listen in on other people's calls when you dialed your message bank or something?
Oh, that was an added feature.
Oh, it was a feature.
You had to dial a few numbers and you could get get someone else's phone call. That was just value adding, I would have thought.
I'd change vendors if I was on this.
Oh, yeah. The outage was a result of vendor related hardware and they declined to name the supplier. Typical.
Anyway, moving right along, .com survivors hit the big time. Have you heard of a company called Hitwise? Any of you guys?
Yes, I have heard of Hitwise.
Now, these guys are amazing. I had two reps in having a chat to me during the last week, it was actually, showing me their wares, and their wares are very impressive. But that's not what I'm going to talk to you about right now. Hitwise was an Australian company started by two guys, Adrian Giles and Andrew Barlow, here in Melbourne, where we broadcast from. Back, was it the late 90s, just before the dot-com explosion, crash, pimple, whatever you want to call it, that happened, popped. They sold their share, they sold it today for $288 million Australian dollars.
What?
Not bad for a couple of guys.
They've done extremely well, haven't they?
Yeah, admittedly, they had a lot of venture capitalists involved, which are people that lend them money to start companies and all that sort of stuff. But at the end of the day, they ended up with something like about $36 million each in what the back pocket. Not bad.
What does Hitwise do, Andrew?
Hitwise is a company which monitors internet traffic. They actually buy statistics from all the major ISPs, and they buy anonymous data as to who went to where and how long they stayed there and why, which is all measurable on ISPs. Then they tabulate it, and they compare industry sectors so that as a marketing person in an organization, you can buy this traffic and say, well, we had an advertising campaign there, look at that spike, and where did people go, and how much market share did we take from other manufacturers? So you can see, just plot your traffic against your components traffic, as well as plotting it against demographics, which is a very interesting thing. So you can see whether
how do they do the demographic thing if it's a bit, you know, secret and you're not meant to know who the end user was and all
that's
that
a very good question, and a question which I'm going to post to the guys because I want to try and get them in on the show later. They've agreed to do it, so we'll get them in one day soon and we'll talk to you. You can ask that question to them in person, because I was spellbound, I'd have to say, when I'm looking at all this information fly across the screen going, my goodness. And of course, it's very honest and open, and you sort of, it does, it stops you in your tracks, because you can search on demographics and watch the top 20 sites that this demographic, because they have A to K's, about 10 classifications.
Yep.
And it's very interesting to see what sort of classifications search for what type of material online. And down the lower end of the socioeconomic scales, sort of like the FGs and Hs before you hit the Ks, the top categories is gambling.
Oh, okay.
Online gambling is fairly big, and it was just an eye-opener. I thought, this
and can is you scary. Can you buy reports from them if you're tailoring a website for a customer?
You buy a subscription like you do a magazine.
Ah, right.
Because it's current. It's updated fairly frequently, like every other day. And their subscriptions, I don't want to turn into commercial for them, but their subscription started about $16,500 a year.
And can you get information on your competitors and how well they're doing?
You choose a market sector. You choose several market sectors.
Right, and they'll tell you how your competitors, your best, your leading competitors going in the market.
Any competitor in that sector, in that genre, will be displayed. So if you sell furniture, you can choose any one of any furniture websites you like or groups thereof to compare against. So, you know, it's really good seeing whether, because you can monitor what happens on your site within your site, but what happens outside of your site, you don't know unless you subscribe to an organization that like these guys.
Yep, absolutely.
And the next other little interesting thing, not on the rundown, I know, Microsoft slams iPhone. Surprise, surprise. Did you hear about this?
No.
Well, Apple's soon-to-be-launched iPhone will be irrelevant.
Yes.
Irrelevant to business.
Wasn't that when it was 2.5G anyway?
Well, who knows? But Microsoft are saying the reason why it's going to be irrelevant is because it's a closed device and does not support Microsoft Office. Now, take a little bit of grain of salt with this, but I'm sort of thinking, spilt milk, guys? It's not going to work with our stuff, so it's irrelevant.
It's a bit like the pot calling the kettle black. It's not going to be able to run Microsoft Office, so it's a closed device.
How exactly. Does
that work? I'd be saying you'd be looking at running like open office type applications and things like that. Then it wouldn't be closed. That'd be good, but yeah, for them to be accusing it of being closed and not being able to run their proprietary applications.
It's interesting. This report came out of ZDNet Australia, and Chris Sorensen, apparently, is the person of Asia Pacific for Microsoft, said, it's a great music phone, and I'm sure it'll be fantastic and have interesting user interface.
That sounds like Apple, doesn't it?
Yeah. And we won't talk about other Apple issues, I can tell you. There's a lot of people with a lot of sad laptops around the place, one particular person. What have you got there?
I've got listener feedback.
Have you? Yes. Oh, yeah, let's do that because I've distracted beautifully.
I've got a hello to Mark Diggins.
Who?
Do we have a Mark Diggins in here?
Hello.
Are we related? From Marty Diggins. Marty Diggins. You've got fan mail. Has worked for Bell South Technologies for 31 years.
Yeah.
He's into amateur radio, which he has been for 28 years.
Wow.
Are we related? See you later. Have fun. From Marty Diggins in Orangeburg, South Carolina.
other than the fact he's probably worked 10 years longer than me, it's very close, very close. Too scary,
it
actually.
It is. It's a bit scary, you know, isn't it?
Works for
it's the power of radio for you, that's, isn't it? Exactly. The internet and podcasting.
Radio.
That's ooh. Exactly right. Hello to Marty, who's listening. Thanks for the post. We've got a forum update. If you haven't been to our forum, you need to go there, forum.techtalkradio.com.au. New users in March. Hello to Brockney. It looks like Brock NKY. I'm not sure how you pronounce that. Cougar 15 in Cessnock. Hello. MV Peterson in Melbourne. Hello. Kobayashi, who's been active on the forum. Keltex and iTog. iTog's been posting on the forum. He wants us to do a story on Melbourne Wireless.
Yeah.
You know the guys that do or don't, depending on the legalities, provide wireless access to people with their own wireless hotspots, and they link all their hotspots together.
Oh, yeah.
It's like an open source project for sharing wireless around Melbourne. He wants to talk about
that. Is it a bit
that.
Underground? Because it it's is, not it meant is. To be quite done.
That's exactly right, yeah. Mark. And they've got lots of websites around for how to build your own antennas and mm-hmm. link to and create your own node type thing.
Yep. So we might sounds try, very interesting.
It does. Hello to Greg W. as well. Oh, and also about that with the wireless stuff, news from the UK, Andrew. We'll be talking about that later with people getting into trouble for leeching wireless.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. We've got a bit of a security segment coming up in about
awesome.
2 segments.
Awesome.
Time.
Yep. Frapper update. Frapper.com/TechTalk community. We've got new people that have signed up there, which is great. Jamie from Oakley East in Victoria says, love your work. Thanks, Jamie. Love yours too. Great tech coverage from our nation on horse and buggy internet. Yes, that's right. Andrew Wilson from Adelaide, South Australia says...
What is this, a Cheerio session?
It is. It's Cheerio. Thanks for a great show. Tech Talk guys and girls. Hi from Adelaide. And also hello girls? To Scruba. Scrubber, is it? S-K-R-U-B-A. All these people on Frapper. So we've got lots of forums and Frapper maps you need to get into.
It's a bit of fun, actually, the Frapper type
that's
of thing.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah, it really is.
What else was I going to say? I have one of those great things. Juiced. We spoke about Juiced last week. That's what went through my mind when you said something there. Last week, I reported that you were having as much success as I was and most of the other people in the humanity trying to play with Juiced. Now,
at the time, you were right.
Just cover Juiced off a little bit. What does it do and what has it done for you, Dr. Ron?
Juiced, as you explained in the last show, Andrew, is television on demand over the internet. Now, it's a project which you can have a look at. Juiced.com is the address, J-O-O-S-T. It's still in beta.
Yeah.
Which means they're testing it, they're fine-tuning, they're ironing out bugs. And I registered to be a beta tester a long time ago. Finally, almost coincidentally, maybe they listened to a certain technology radio program, I received an email the next day saying, congratulations, your beta account has now been activated, and they gave me log-on details.
When are they going to upgrade you to Gamma?
I don't, from beta to gamma. I don't know, Mark. It is, however, a good TV streaming service. It's free. It runs in like a full screen mode on your monitor.
Oh, this is what I haven't been privileged to yet.
I'm giving you a sneak preview.
Can I come around to your place
and
watch
it? Yeah, you can. You can have a look. It uses little applets and widgets, transparent widgets, to control audio and
what
change
color are
channels.
They? Transparent?
Well,
how do you see them if they're transparent?
Well, they pop up over the program you're watching.
Oh, how annoying. Like a watermark.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Exactly like a watermark to change channels and volume and search for content. If you want to search for something, go to a search window, and I've dropped my notes, go to a search window and type in technology or Africa. You want to see an animal planet show.
Yeah.
And it'll show you all of the programs that are currently available. And you can double-click on one of those in the menu. It'll start streaming to your computer.
Okay.
Sounds very interesting, really. I look forward to experiencing
so
this one day
when
my
programs come
system
from?
Works.
Are they...
They're like, all out of the US, and there's a certain number of programs which are available at the moment, but they're going to be...
So were they all old cable programs that have now done their time? And
it's cable-type content, Mark. Looking at it very quickly, as I have done, it looks like it's cable-type programming,
mm-hmm.
But they say that there'll be a lot more coming online soon. There's no Linux version yet, but it is in the pipeline. Currently, Windows XP, Service Pack 2, and Mac versions... And the other thing I just wanted to touch on quickly was the amount of data it uses. Because it's video streaming...
How does this go on your bandwidth? Because you're, what, about 7 meg per second now at home, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm okay at the moment. So,
it's good.
In 1 hour of viewing, it's going to use about 320 megabytes of data.
Oh, good. So, not for your average thing. And this leads to another question, actually. I bought an issue of Australian Personal Computer, I think, the other day. And they were talking about, one of their major articles up front is video going to kill the internet with the bandwidth? There are a lot of systems out there that can't cope with the extra demand because everyone's now got high speed access to it. Well, maybe, except
not
in this country.
Everyone,
but, yeah, not everyone. But just because applications like this, Juiced comes along and says, hey, I need 350, 400 meg for an hour of watching television. you're going to go through your 200 meg Telstra plan fairly quick, or your 1 gig. So it's really going to alter things a lot.
You're going to scream through it. The other thing to note very quickly is that you're going to need a fast machine. I've tested it on a couple of machines. You do have to load some software. It's slow on a 2.4 gig Celeron with 1 gig of RAM. And it's completely unusable on a 1.7 gig Pentium P4 with 1 gig of RAM.
Why would you even load it up on something like that?
Oh, they're just they're my test machines. And I just had them lying around, and I thought, I'll give it a try on this one, give it a try on that one. Yeah, so you need quite a good machine, high-spec machine.
Excellent. Jeff Dudley just sent us an email. Hi, Jeff. He sent to onair@techtalkradio.com.au. Yeah, if you've got any emails, if you'd like to send it through, by all means. And I'll ask that question to Mark later. He wants to know what happened to the satellite dish off the Hawthorne Exchange in Billwood Road. Do you know?
No, I know they pulled it down, but apparently
it's been in the parked position for ages or something.
But if anyone does know where it is, could they please contact the Hawthorne Police?
Haven't used it for years. No, went somewhere else. I did hear something about 12 months ago, but I can't remember what it was.
Okay. All right, let's move on to what's on the rundown. Qantas, as you heard in the opening bit, how feral is that going to be? You're going to be sitting there on your plane and you're going to get beep, 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 and beep, all these beep, stupid beep. Ringtones and beeping things and... It's going to drive us crazy. As I said in the opener, I'm just going to go for the non-smoking, smoking. I'm going to go for the non-SMS section of the plane. I reckon they can... You know, a little seat thing, you know, when you get in the aircraft, it says the no-smoking sign. Well, they can change it to a phone or no SMS section or something like that. But it's pretty impressive technology,
clever.
Though.
It's clever technology. They're putting a mobile phone cell in the actual airplane, aren't they, Mark?
That's right. Yeah, I saw some information which I couldn't divulge about a year ago on this, and they'll run some leaky coax over the seats.
The coax is the radio cable.
Yeah, but this is called brands of it is called Radiax.
Radiax, yeah.
Yep. So it's like a coax cable, but it's got holes cut in the outer sheet, so it actually radiates a little bit.
So as the water flows down the cable, to use an acronym, it leaks out.
Yeah, it leaks out, that's right. Yeah. And your cable and your signal
and it can leak
back
in again when you're talking. Yeah.
That's right. And that way you've got an antenna really close to you, so therefore you transmit at very low powers. They need to transmit it. They can transmit at low powers, the pico cell. And you transmit back at very low powers, which means it doesn't interfere with the plane.
So that's the secret for avoiding interference, is having all of the mobile phone handsets running at extremely low power, isn't it?
That's right, yep. So, and
how's that going to affect ground-based systems? Because low power doesn't matter when you're at 30,000 feet, I wouldn't have thought.
No, very, very good question. When it's on the ground, let me explain it a different way. The way I understand it is that the company that Qantas will sign on with will be completely unrelated to Telstra, but they need to use a frequency that's signed on when they're in Australia that either Optus, Vodafone or Telstra use. So they had to team up with someone, and it looks like it's with Telstra, so that they can put their pico cell on the same frequency as Telstra's network, and then Telstra have a roaming agreement with them so that Telstra mobiles will be able to use that pico cell. Does that make sense? But you'll pay an extraordinary amount, because when you're using it, it'll be a satellite link back to, say, maybe somewhere in Europe, and it'll actually process all your...
International roaming fees will apply.
Yes.
That's going to really curtail some people, I reckon.
So, that's sort of how it works. They're using the frequencies, and they had to get Telstra's agreement and that sort of thing. So there would have been some agreement. We'll use your frequencies, Telstra, but you can roam onto our network and have that as an added feature.
Anyway, one Boeing 767 cops this, and if you're unlucky enough to be on it, well, that's all I can say. Fly a different airline, I suppose. But is this the shape of things to come? Do you reckon? Mobile phones and laptops on flying internet access. Didn't Boeing try this and it failed dismally because they couldn't afford the upkeep of the system because no one was using it because it was so expensive?
Yeah, that's right. So maybe that was, you know, for data and SMSs where it might be cheap enough, might be okay. Also, I've got to be aware that people sitting on the plane, people outside the plane can actually get onto it, and you're then blocking the original, like, Telstra network or something like that.
Yeah.
So you've got to be careful you don't get onto it if you're outside the plane at the gate lounge.
Well, they turn it on. It says, about 6,000 feet it won't activate unless it's underneath that.
Okay.
So maybe that's the workaround for that problem.
Yep.
So
yep, that's probably it.
Big Pond launches Express Mobile Card on NextG, and this is what I've been hanging out for. But I missed by 2 weeks. But nonetheless, for those people with new modern laptops which have the Express PCM CIA card, now, they're the little flat pack things that slide in, about the size of your credit card. Well, if you get your credit card and you cut it in half, long ways, that's about the width of the new Express ones. And that's the size of slot that appears in your modern new laptop. And Telstra finally launched them, which I think is terrific news. So if you've been hanging out for those... now's the time.
You were looking at it in December, And
I was.
There wasn't anything available. We didn't know you had an Express card in your new PC, in your new laptop at that time.
No.
We tried the other one and go, why won't this push in?
Yeah, wouldn't we? It just, then you look down and go, oh, it's an Express one. It's missing half of its bits.
Just force it. Just push it harder.
Nah, that's yes.
Come on.
I've worked with people with attitudes like that.
And then we tried USB with you and you said, no, I'm not having USB.
Oh, I don't want dingly dangly bits off my box.
USB's got some advantages, believe it or not, because you can use an extension USB cable when you're in a marginal signal area.
Well, this is what you've been saying.
And,
you can,
you can hang it up over, you know, something like that. So yeah, get it away from the noisy laptops.
I can do that with my little card now. I've got an extension jack. I can actually take my roll of gaffer tape and I can sticky tape it on the side of the aircraft and use the cell down on the ground rather than the one in the aircraft.
Okay, fair enough. But there's some, so there's some advantages of getting your card away from your laptop, which is a noisy RF environment. So noisy radio environment, you actually get better signal away from it.
All right, Big Brother. Big Brother. You know that show, Channel 10? They push technology to the nth degree. Remember what happened last year?
They launched last night, didn't they?
Oh, did they? I missed that. Aren't I lucky?
I think I watched one or two episodes of the very first Big Brother, however many years ago, and thought, no, it's not for me.
What a Big Brother up to technology-wise.
What's going on now?
Well, Adam's going to fill us in a little bit shortly, but if you're with Hutchison, it's like Big Brother's teamed up with Hutchison and done all that sort of stuff.
They've been doing that for years, yep.
Yeah, all these new gadgety things like that. But Adam, who was in last week, has got a bit of we'll talk about that in just a sec, but he also sent through another thing about porn and privacy and Big Brother's Big Brother. There was an article today in The Age, just sort of letting everybody know a little bit about the technology and what's going on, but I don't know. To me, it's one of those scenarios where you've got a lot of people accessing, a lot of young people accessing content, which is a premium content, you know, very expensive to access.
And they must make an absolute fortune out of those premium rate SMS services.
But even still, like I get caught out, there's some radio stations and other people where you SMS a 1900 number
too. Yeah, yep.
And they're not normally included in caps and things like that.
No.
Because it's a premium thing on any of the phone companies. So you start using those things and the next thing you know, you go, whoa, where did that bill come from?
I think I'm pretty safe. I can make a dozen phone calls here. It's all included in the cap. And then, I've actually...
It's not really that... I mean, we talk about how expensive it is, but really, if you compare that to filling out an envelope, putting a stamp on it and sending it off for a competition... It's the same. I mean, 50-cent stamp, and you've got to buy the envelope and go to the trouble of it, or you can send an SMS, and a lot of those are 50 or 55 cents as well. Not all of them, but the competition ones.
The thing you've got to be wary of.
About the same, so you may as well.
The thing that sits in the back of my mind is this is opt-in marketing. You know, under the spam laws in Australia, if you make contact with an organisation electronically or even via post, you can actually now be targeted by... electronic marketing, it's okay.
That's entered into a contract agreement.
Exactly right. But if you don't make any contact with these organisations once whatsoever, either via SMS or via post or whatever it is like that, then they have no right to spam you and you can let Bruce Matthews know all about it. And I'm sure he'd take a keen interest.
How many people, things like that. He's the ACMA guys, though, or know about when you've SMS for a competition actually got spam back again? You know, like over and over, rather than just an acknowledgement that you actually entered the competition, how many times have you done it?
I have never entered any sort of competition via SMS or dialed or SMS'd a premium rate number.
Yep.
I have, however, on the odd occasion, maybe once or twice or thrice in the last few years, received a spam SMS message from a company in Australia.
Okay.
I have called them back and I have given them blue murder on the telephone and said, don't you dare send me spam SMSs ever again.
Yep.
And they said, I'm very sorry, we won't. Because... if you got the number of spam email messages you get in your inbox as a proportion of your legitimate emails, if you got SMS messages...
Yeah, that's right.
Oh,
you can't deal with them the same way, can you? So you don't want them.
But
honestly, my wife sends off these competition things regularly and nothing. Nothing back.
Here's the Big Brother dilemma. Basically, what's happened is Big Brother's website exposed personal details of fans who signed up for special features.
The website exposed personal details of fans?
That's right. So not like the end users, the participants in this thing, following reports that visitors to a private Big Brother site were then sent to a hardcore porn page, it seems the names and phone numbers of these people who have registered for the official site were able to be viewed by others. So some technical problems, to say the least. Let's have a listen.
Are they using the same vendor as Optus?
I don't know. They didn't... have to read on. We'll see what happens. Maybe they're using an Optus web server. Yeah, maybe. All right, you're listening to Dr. Ron, Mark Diggers, and myself, Andrew McComb. This is Tech Talk Radio. We'll be back with some interesting information about some technology that the online crooks are using very shortly. But first, here's our new segment, A View from a Couch, and it's a very comfy couch. And if you visit the website, you can find out more. Here's Adam.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
Channel 10's Big Brother may not be the most intellectual viewing on the Idiot Box, but it seems to be leading the way in terms of new technologies. If you're not familiar with the concept, Big Brother involves locking a dozen or so attention-seeking youths in a house and making them do moronic things. Meanwhile, people on the outside with nothing better to do watch every moment on television. Once a week, these fans pay for the privilege of voting by SMS to decide who gets kicked out of the house. The local version of Big Brother has announced what it claims to be an Australian first, Catch-Up TV. Running in conjunction with mobile network provider 3, Catch-Up TV will give Big Brother fans the exclusive opportunity to catch up on all the drama of the previous Sunday night eviction show or Monday night nomination show on their 3 mobile phone. The videos will be available the day after their broadcast on Channel 10. Obviously, the idea of catch-up TV is nothing new. Australia's 9 and 10 networks already put shows up on their websites after they've screened, and the ABC is also expanding its online TV offering. The idea of putting television on your mobile phone is also not new. I suspect the Australian first here is the fact that you can watch an entire show you missed on your mobile phone via the mobile phone network. Personally, I couldn't think of anything more painful than trying to watch television on a tiny phone screen. But some fools will do it. And luckily for 3 and Channel 10, they're usually the same fools that enjoy watching trash like Big Brother. It doesn't stop there. The BB community, as it's known, will also connect Big Brother fans across Australia by allowing them to share videos, post their comments on what's happening in the Big Brother house, and chat with other Big Brother diehard fans all via their 3 mobile phones. Suckers, I mean customers, can watch Catch-Up TV for $2 per episode or purchase a Big Brother Live mobile TV day pass for $1 a day. 3 also offers a 24-hour day live broadcast from the Big Brother house, but not surprisingly, it's on a slight delay so nothing unsavoury is broadcast. Of course, there's also the usual ringtones, wallpapers, and other rubbish designed to part fools from their pocket money. Regardless of your opinion of reality television shows like Big Brother, it's still encouraging to see television networks embracing these kinds of new technologies and business models. If Big Brother Catch-Up TV proves to be a success for 3 and Channel 10, then maybe we can see the same ideas applied in a slightly more highbrow environment. Whether you love Big Brother or hate it, such trashy television seems to be leading us into the brave new world.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1300 664 882 and leave a voice message. That's 1300 664 882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
And welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb here at the mic tonight with Dr. Ron and Mark Diggins. And you just heard Adam Turner there telling us all about Big Brother. You can subscribe to the Adam Turner podcast by visiting the Tech Talk Radio website. So you'll only get Adam's segment each and every week if you just want to subscribe to that for whatever reason. But I'd suggest you go to the Tech Talk Radio website and subscribe to our entire podcast. Well worth the investment. We'll fill up your hard drive in next to no time and crank that bandwidth over if you don't want to use Juiced.
It's such a large investment as well.
What, it is.
You copy and paste and that's all you do.
Now, the other thing too, on the Tech Talk Radio website, if you scroll down to the bottom of it at the moment, we've just put up a little dig option there for some of our things. If you like our podcast, then dig it. It's been up for about a week and no one's noticed it. There's 5 there. Come on, like to rally the troops. Can we have by the time this time next week at least 10?
We get more than 5 hits a day, don't we?
Exactly.
5 hits a week, Andrew, don't we?
The podcast is huge. So we go through tens of gigs of bandwidth each week with the podcast, which is fantastic. And that's why it's hosted overseas, because we couldn't do anything like that in this country. So nonetheless, let's talk about security, online security. Dr. Ron, you've heard Eugene Kaspersky. He was on Tech Talk Radio recently. There's a good podcast to go and have a bit more of a listen to.
Yes.
What do you think the state of play is with technology and computers? Are you happy with the way it is, or do things bother you when you get online?
Things don't bother me personally when I get online, but I feel for people, Andrew. I really do. It's getting harder and harder online to sort out the good from the bad and the honest from the deceitful. Isn't it?
There's
really
a lot of crooks out there, though, don't you think, Mark? What do you reckon? Are you happy online these days? Or are you cautious? Or does it?
I came to a website the other day, and a reputable one at that, and I had to spend some money on it. Didn't have the padlock, and I really hummed and hawed about it. And I actually had the chance to report this site to Microsoft, and it came back and said, "Yeah, it's all cool." And it told me that it was using SSL.
Report the site to Microsoft. How did you do that?
It's something with like the little eye down the bottom of the Internet Explorer window, and I clicked on that, thinking, "Where's this padlock that I should be getting if I'm going to put my credit card in here?" And I clicked on this and it went off. And look, I came in via the right way because I typed the address in, and in the end I did it, but I was like, oh, I wish this had just had the padlock on it and I'd be feeling a lot happier about it, you know.
I was helping my poor confused mother during the week, and she'd received several PayPal emails.
Okay.
And because she's a big user of PayPal, and they looked so genuine. They really, really did. There were no spelling mistakes, no grammatical errors. The logos were all correct. It was addressed to her by her name at her correct email address that she uses. And the only way that you could verify that they were fraudulent was just by hovering the mouse pointer over one of the links where it said, click here to verify your details or to fix your credit problem or whatever it was.
Yep.
And it was at www.paypal.com. dot some other strange domain name. But if you looked at it very fast, yep, it looked so real. And when you went into the message headers of the email, you could see that it wasn't genuine as well.
But no one would know how to do that if you're not this way inclined.
This is the problem. It's getting very, very difficult for people to be able to use the internet safely.
Well, we're not here to scare people. We're here to educate.
We're here to educate and to help you. That's why we're here.
Now, the AAAS, have you heard of these guys?
The American Association for the Advancement of Science.
That's them. They're a very interesting organisation based in San Francisco, right up the road from LID in California. Now,
go to bed.
Yes. they recently had a seminar, conference-y sort of thing, where they were talking about the potential problems of the new era, what we're going to see. Now, one of the things which sort of scared me a little bit is that some of these crooks are no longer targeting the computers that we use. They're targeting the things which connect us to the internet, which are not part of our computers. That is the wireless router, which is very popular these days.
Yes.
You've no doubt done a bit of surfing and all that, and you've popped up and seen everyone's network neighbourhood thing. Well, I won't steal their thunder, but there's what they call a DNS server in it, and people are actually trying to get in there and hack a bit of that. Now, the first person we're going to have a listen to is Aaron Emmer, I think that's how you pronounce his name, from Redix Labs in Nevada in the United States.
Hi, I'm Aaron Amy from Radix Labs. There's a famous question once asked of the bank robber Willie Sutton, why do you rob banks? And the answer he gave was, because that's where the money is. And if Willie Sutton were alive and thinking clearly today, he would be propagating malware, crimeware, and engaging in online identity fraud. When you look at the risk-reward trade-off, if you assume that criminals are rational beings, at least as much as the rest of us are, a bank robber makes off on average about $4,700 and spends an average of 83 months in jail when convicted, and the conviction rates are pretty high. An average bank embezzler makes off with $42,000. An average embezzler spends 5 months in prison, so that's a much better risk-reward trade-off. And when you look online, the average victim is out $4,800, and you have massive economies of scale where you're able to attack literally millions of people at once. You don't need an insider, and you can do it from remote jurisdictions where it's extremely unlikely that you'll ever be tracked down and convicted. It's a very effective place to make a lot of money as a criminal. And it requires only moderate technical skills. There are two ways that crimeware mostly gets propagated. By crimeware, I'm talking about illegal software that runs on your computer and does things without your knowledge that results in a benefit to somebody else. It happens either through social engineering, deception, piggybacking onto other software that you're installing on your computer, or it can even be embedded into a USB thumb drive that you might find on the street and put in your computer, or through security exploits, exploiting some security flaw. And there are even affiliate marketing programs now. There are criminals that are running multi-level marketing schemes where you will be paid for installing malware on other people's computers. And they've got sophisticated tracking mechanisms to actually monitor this and figure out how much you should be paid. There are prefabricated toolkits that you can buy, like Nuclear Grabber, also known as Hackstore, like Web Attacker, like something called Q406 Rollup, and configurators. You need only moderate technical skills to put together a very sophisticated attack using what are essentially commercial software products that are available to attackers. And these can do things like keyloggers, which will monitor everything that you enter in, your passwords, your credit card numbers, your bank account numbers on your computer. Screen loggers that will monitor screen-based entry. Trojans that will pop up fake login screens and monitor the things that you're entering. Session hijackers, where when you actually log in and you're on your real bank account, it'll grab control of your browser and cause it to transfer money off to an attacker. Transaction generators that run in payment processors and create fraudulent transactions. System reconfigurators that will change your system so when you go to your real bank site, you don't even have to be fooled after this, it will redirect that somewhere else, or it will sit in the middle of your session and keep track of everything that's going on. And out-and-out data stealers that will simply troll through your computer and figure out, you know, what data you have that might be valuable and steal it. And there are a number of different ways that crimeware can be profitable as well. The online identity fraud can also be distributed in denial-of-service extortion attacks against, for example, offshore casinos, where they'll recruit thousands, hundreds of thousands, even millions of computers into a network and use them to drive websites offline. It can be click fraud, which is creating a revenue stream from advertisements by simulating traffic. It can be data ransoming, in which they actually encrypt the contents of your hard drive, and then you have to pay them for the key to decrypt it and get your own data back. And they're building consolidated data warehouses that contain a wide variety of information about people, and over time they can get more and more targeted with the attacks. So when they find out your bank account number, they already know where you live, your mother's maiden name, the nature of the mortgage on your house, etc. So we're up against very sophisticated criminals, and they're doing the kinds of things that you'd expect an organized enterprise to do, and employing technology intelligently in the process.
Does that surprise you, Dr. Ron, to hear people speak that way of what the crooks are currently up to?
Doesn't surprise me, being an IT professional. No, I'm acutely aware of those sorts of issues.
It's coming back to my mind there, people deception. Hmm. And really it comes down to, if you doubt it just for a moment online, don't do it.
It shouldn't surprise me, but I hadn't heard of all those things. I mean, you know, that's scary, really scary.
It is. And just an example I can give you from something that's happened to me just recently. My kids like playing games. My little five-year-old loves to play those games that you get from those house things like gamehouse.com and things like that. Now, Eugene Kaspersky on the show recently talked about the fact that you don't get anything for free. So within these games, they put in benign software, but it tracks your usage online, what you do, where you go to, and feeds back to these guys purely because you wanted something for free. Now, this, I think, is basically what we just heard there. It's a legal form of malware, and malware is where people are actually trying to get these sort of loggers and things like that onto your computer. So, moral of the story is just be very wary what you download. And if your kids use a computer, make sure you don't do your internet banking on it.
Do you remember those funny little things called message mates that people used to email around maybe 10 years ago probably? And they're little executable files. And you double-click on them in your email, and they have little funny little cartoons that pop up on the screen and sing your happy birthday message. Funny little novelty message things.
They just go straight in the trash can if you get stuff like that. Like these greeting card things. Exactly. Oh, right. They scare me, greeting cards.
Well, 10 years ago, you wouldn't have even thought about it. You go, oh yeah, this is from Andrew. This will be all right. I'll double click on this. I'll have a look.
Yeah.
And when we first started using personal firewalls on PCs, we were horrified when we saw, oh, this message mate.exe is contacting this IP address. Do you want to let it do it? And we used to think, I wonder what that's doing. We're all very naive.
Back then we were.
Back then. But
now, then again, things are a bit more sophisticated now than what they were back then too.
Yeah. But you're right, Andrew. You know, you're running programs and applications on your computer and you get nothing for nothing in this world. If it's free, you can bet your bottom dollar that that program will be doing things that you're not aware of in the background.
Or ran Scanbot. What is it? Spybot. To scan the computer after we loaded up one of these games up, and I ran it before and after because I was really curious to see what it would do.
Yeah.
And can I tell you the amount of double click things and Lexi travel, Lexi cookies and stuff like that that have been installed on the computer just by downloading and installing a free game that the kids wanted to play with?
Exactly. That's why I've got all these test computers at home to load up things like we're talking about Juiced before and stuff like that. And I've got production machines which I use for doing audio editing and things like that and professional applications. And I don't want to have any of that sort of garbage
exactly.
on my production machines. If I'm wanting to test beta software, I load it on something. If it gets trashed, I don't care.
Except if you're running Vista because you can't reinstall it after that.
I'm not. I'm here to tell you, everybody, I'm not running Vista.
Now, moving right along, this is what Symantec had to say at the AAAS convention.
So, hi, I'm Zulfikar Ramzan. I work with Symantec. Unfortunately, I don't have more optimism right now. So we actually do have a lot of great technologies for dealing with these problems, but I'm going to describe a new problem to you. So just a quick show of hands, how many people here use either a broadband connection at home, like a DSL modem or a cable modem, to connect to the internet? That's almost everybody. That's a good sign. How many people here have either more than one computer at home on their network or use a wireless connection when they connect to the internet? Ooh, very good. Okay. Well, maybe not very good for what I'm about to tell you. But so actually this past week, we publicized a new threat. It's called drive-by farming. And this is the idea behind the threat. When you connect to the internet, sometimes you can look at a web page and you might view it. It turns out that it's possible to create a web page that when you just simply view it, it will attempt to make changes to the devices on your home network. So that device could include that little router that's used by you to connect to the internet. Now, one of the changes that we can make purely in a web page is to something called the DNS settings. This is a domain name system. Now, the domain name system, for those of you who don't know, is practically like directory assistance, or it's like the operator for the internet. When you want to have two computers on the internet connect to each other, typically the way that happens is there's something called an internet protocol address. In much the same way, if I want to go to my friend's house, I might use my telephone directory to look up his name, find his address, and then drive to his place. The internet works the same way. When you want to go to www.bank.com, you actually look up something on a DNS server. The DNS server will tell you the internet address of bank.com, and then your web browser will take you to that internet address. Now, all of this is happening behind the scenes. You're not really noticing it. It turns out that with this attack that we've discovered this past week, an attacker can change the setting on your home broadband router. So instead of using your internet service provider's telephone directory, so to speak, to connect to a website, you'll use the rogue attacker's telephone directory. So now next time you type in www.bank.com, you're going to go to the attacker's webpage instead. And you won't know the difference because you'll still see bank.com on your web browser. Now this attack, it's extremely dangerous. It can affect a lot of people. And in order to fall for it, all you have to do is simply look at the offending webpage. You don't have to install something. You don't have to click on downloading anything. You don't have to be tricked in any other way other than being somehow driven to a particular site. This potential threat could affect, I think, somewhere upwards of 50% of all home broadband users. And the way the threat works at a very high level is that we can essentially create a web page that will attempt to log into your home router. Now, these home routers do come with a password. Most people don't know that it comes with a password, because there's really very little reason for you ever to log into your home router and configure it unless, you know, you're like me and like to play with these things. And so we believe that it's a very serious issue. We're hoping that we can get the word out there and tell people that all they have to do to protect themselves from this very grave threat is change their home router password. It's a new type of malware in the sense that this is malware that's being entirely hosted on somebody's web browser. So the web browser is a nice tool for being able to view web pages. But also nowadays, the web browser and web content is so rich that your web browser effectively is executing instructions whenever it views a new web page. And those instructions can now potentially be malicious instructions. And so that creates a new vector of attack, and I think that it's one that we'll likely be seeing in the wild. Right now, this is still a proof of concept that we've developed internally, and this was developed together with Marcus Jacobson and Sid Stam at Indiana University. And we believe that it's an important threat that we should get out there and fix, and it's an interesting new type of malware threat. Fortunately, there is an easy fix. Just, you know, change that home broadband password, and you'll be all set.
Drive-by farming. It's an interesting name. I don't quite know how they came up with that one, but nonetheless, got a password on your router, Dr. Ron? Because I like to tinker with my router. I know where my passwords are.
As with all these things, there's a trade-off between usability and security. The more usable and user-friendly and easy you want your system to be, the less secure it's going to be. And manufacturers, the world over, they're shipping these things ready to use. You unpack them from the box, you plug them into the wall, turn the power on, plug a network cable in, and they work.
And for everybody out there, they have to cater to a multitude of configurations, so they open it up, don't they?
They open it wide open. And the problem with that is that while it's very easy to use and configure and get going, and hey, presto, you're surfing on the internet straight away with your brand new wireless router, the security is not what it should be. And they've deliberately dumbed it down so that it's easy for you to set up and configure and get online straight away. What you need to do is go out of your way to put a new admin password on your router, to change it from the default one, potentially change the IP address, the default address of the router on your internal network, and make it a little bit secure.
It's not hard to do, is it?
It's not hard to do.
You'll find that you would have got a book with your router, and within that book we'll say, here's the IP address. Type that IP address into your web browser, and it'll ask you to log on. Once you log on there, change the password, but write it down. Don't do what I do and write it down, and you come back 2 years later and you go, oh, I want to do something on my router. What's the password?
There's a factory default button here. I'll press that.
Exactly. You lose all your settings that you spent hours collecting. So write your password down. Have you had any experience with wireless routers? You use one, Mark?
No, we don't have them at home. I haven't gone there yet. We have the cable modem directly connected to the PC.
Well, there's things like, when you came and visited me and brought over that Belkin Wi-Fi, was it Skype handset?
Yep, that's the one.
That device was using an unlocked wireless network in the neighbourhood.
Yes.
And the things with unlocked wireless networks is I don't have to be on his network to log in and change his password. You know, I can do that from my laptop just accessing his wireless network. So lock him down, guys.
That's all right. The other thing you need to do is change the what's called the SSID, which is the network identifier of your wireless router.
You can hide them too, can't you?
You can hide them. You can make them so that they can't be scanned.
Yeah, because normally when you turn your laptop on, it says, I've found a wireless network in your neighborhood. Would you like me to try and connect? And that wireless network name is the SSID you speak of.
That's correct.
There's some very funny ones out there too. People have senses of humor with wireless broadband routers, let me tell you. I can't say on the air.
And if you find one that's completely open and has no security at all, you go in there and change it to say free internet access here as the name. Yeah, I mean, this is the problem, isn't it? I mean, people like, you know, us, we would see an open network and it's called Netgear. And you go, oh, crikey, this person's unpacked it from the box, turned it on.
Can't you?
They've done nothing. And the name of the network is Netgear. Well, that's,
go to the Netgear site, find the password.
Ladies and gentlemen, that tells me the default password of your router. It tells me the IP address. I can get in. I can change all those things. I can wreak havoc if I'm a rogue operator.
So it just goes to show this is the new level that these crooks are targeting. They've moved away from the device which you use to surf the net, and they're now actually targeting your connectivity devices. Things which are the weakest point, I guess, which is a unlocked wireless router, because they know the password to the Netgear router. They just put that code in a bit of web page, and as soon as you visit it, it goes off and executes that bit of code, as we just heard, and tries to change the phone book in your router.
Not like the good old days where they just put a chalk mark on the ground and said free internet. They actually want to do malicious stuff now.
That's in the course of what, 12 months? We were talking about that last year on the show.
Yeah, that's
a couple of
right.
years.
Yeah. Nowadays, and we're going to talk about some wireless hacking fairly shortly, how it all stacks up and the legalities of it, because some kids got done in the UK for it. Our last interview tonight from the AAAS conference is a lady called Susan Weasel, I think, W-Z-E-L. I don't know how they pronounce their names over there. It's interesting. She works for the Stevens Institute of Technology.
Okay, my name is Cecilia Wetzel. I'm at Stevens in New Jersey. My focus here is on wireless threats. And so if you thought, well, okay, so I understood that my computer is kind of putting me at risk, there may be the danger of disclosing a lot of information, if someone can break into my computer, if I surf to not so good web pages, if I install bad software. Well, okay, so I accepted that for my computer. I need to take certain countermeasures. Now the question is, am I safe? And the story is, well, we're using an increasing number of wireless devices, smartphones, PDAs, and the more sophisticated these devices become, the more they act like a regular computer. And so basically, we're seeing the same type of threats, the same type of danger that we see on the computer, we see it here on these little devices. And the imminent danger of this is that, well, for the longest time, we believe that these devices are safe, right? We just used them to make phone calls, and we felt pretty comfortable with it. And now we basically have to change the mindset of people, telling them, look, these devices have become so powerful. Actually, many of those are more powerful than computers used to be a couple of years ago. So suddenly we see this danger here on these cell phones, on these PDAs, and we need to tell people you need to be as careful with these small devices than you have to be with your computer at home. And that requires a lot of change in mindset for people because, well, we're not used to it. This was a safe device, and we hold it very close to our hearts, right? I mean, we put it to our face. So it's something very special. The thing is, just to give you one example, there is a piece of software out there that if you install it here on the cell phone, that allows this person, this attacker, to actually remotely turn on the microphone of your cell phone without you knowing it. It was actually proclaimed to allow you to monitor your kids, see where your spouse is, see what kind of messages they send. At the same time, it basically also cuts the other way in that it allows someone to actually monitor your life. It's a microphone that can be turned on at any point in time, and so now just think about it. How often do you leave your cell phone on, or do it the other way around? How often do you actually turn it off? Where do you leave your cell phone? And now suddenly you have to worry about the fact that someone may be able to listen in wherever the cell phone is left. So suddenly you're basically turning your personal life inside out. And this is something that we need to keep in mind, that these threats that we are seeing on computers have now basically moved onto wireless devices.
I think I'll be turning the cell phone off in meetings from now on for another reason.
Yeah, that's right.
Anyone heard of anything like that? You PDA, or Dr. Ron, you've got a PDA. Does that ever bother you that you can get viruses and nasty things on your PDA, not to mention your mobile?
The whole virus thing sort of does concern me a little bit.
But what, on the PDA or not?
On the PDA, yeah. You do have to be wary of what you download and where you download it from, what you're doing. Fortunately, with PDAs, you're not installing software a great deal, I guess.
Yeah, not regularly.
Not regularly. You're not downloading big attachments on emails and things like that. Usually just reading the first few lines of an email message.
Read text, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what about the phone option that we were just talking about there, people being able to turn... Now, that's not the first time that's happened either, and it's quite common with these new laptops which have cameras and audio devices built into them as well.
Yeah, they were doing it through Bluetooth, weren't they?
Yeah,
I think so. The wireless connection of Bluetooth.
I mean, wireless hacks and things like that, connecting out through people's Bluetooth when they leave it open.
Yeah, I've got a PDA now, and you know you can connect to it via infrared, via Bluetooth, via the normal phone in it. I mean, there's many ways to connect them via USB, and you know, there's so many ways to actually, you've got to protect yourself. Sort of.
We're going to get to a point where you go, oh, I've had my mobile now for 6 months, it'll be so infected I have to throw it out and buy a new one.
Oh, I hope not. It's an interesting point, though. I rarely turn my mobile phone off these days. It just stays on.
You have now. I noticed that. It wouldn't stop ringing before.
Yeah, I know. Yes, I deliberately turned off to stop people ringing me. But at night time, it just gets put beside my bed and or left on the coffee table in the living room and doesn't get turned off. I stick the charger in it.
Leave it on.
Yeah, I just charge it when it hits the car on the way in to the office in the morning and the way back out. That's where it charges. Pretty much the same.
Takes too long to start up. Takes a minute, 90 seconds that you're waiting for it to boot up, punch a PIN number in and leave it on.
Now, you're probably sitting back there at home thinking, I've got a Mac, it doesn't bother me in the slightest.
Ah.
Well, guys, if you've got a Mac, I've got news for you.
I love those new Mac ads, by the way.
They're good, aren't they?
Very good.
There's a mob in the United States called CanSec West Security Conference. Well, that's the name of the conference run by CanSec West. Basically, what they did is they said, okay, in Vancouver, apparently, they were offering a free MacBook to people because it was a convention for hackers in a lot of respects. And they put out these Macs and said, righto, guys, free notebook to whoever cracks whoever can hack into the Mac. And like red rag to a bull, off they went and they did their stuff. Now, day one, they had to target the operating system. Now, no one could get into the operating system, which was good. That's the way it should be.
That's your challenge, yeah.
But the second day, they were allowed to attack via a web page through Safari, which is the Macintosh web browser, like we have Internet Explorer on Mac on PCs, which are Microsoft-based. You have Safari. And it took very little time for the people to actually get in there and exploit and get into the Mac OS via Safari.
Interesting.
And they actually ended up giving a couple of laptops away because it just was so easy to do, apparently. But there you go. So the moral of the story is, which came away from this conference, was that Macintosh is safe because it's only got 10% of the market, really. So if you want the minority, then why are people going to go and hack, like we heard earlier on in our stories tonight? People are going to go the mass marketing option. If you can throw one line into a big pond and you've got a chance of getting 90% of the population as opposed to 10% of the population, that's each and every time you're going to cast it into that 90% pond, aren't you?
That's right. That's where you're going to be focusing your efforts. Yeah.
So if you want to be, I guess, you know, there's the adage, really. If you want to be safe, get a Mac, drive a Ford.
So what operating system and computer do hackers use?
I don't know. Probably the ones they're trying to hack so they can test their code. I would be guessing it at a good thing, because there's lots of software out there to help you do that.
A lot of real hackers.
Like yourself?
Oh, now, come on.
I've seen you break into a hard drive before.
Yeah, well, there's different definitions of the word hacker, isn't there?
Yeah.
People who commit crime.
Oh, no, you're not that type of hacker.
Using computers.
Yep.
Are often very Unix savvy.
Okay, right down to the bit and byte.
Yeah, they are, because they hop from system to system and they hide their traces as they go, and they do that for the reason...
Command line interface and things like that.
Exactly, yeah. Right, mate. It's very fast, it's very easy for them, it's a very familiar interface to use, and they can hide their tracks very easily.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're trying to be traced by law enforcement authorities... Yeah, they can. You zigzag all over the world, and you end up you'd give up. You wouldn't be able to track them down.
Mm-hmm.
Another interesting thing that's come to the forefront this week too is internet cafes with free wireless, or not so much free wireless, but wireless. You go there and log on and pay.
Yep.
This has become another drive-by sort of scenario here. People come in, then they drop their spam on the wireless network's internet cafe, and then do a runner.
Drop their payload.
Yeah, exactly. Drop their payload in the internet. If you spend your $2 and buy yourself a cafe, you drop your payload and off you go. But this is becoming a bit of a problem for internet cafes, and so much so that it might actually...
So what do they drop? I don't get it.
Well, like, if you want to spam 100,000 people...
Yeah, you do it from there.
You want to do your BCC, okay. You rock into your internet cafe and away you go. Or you take your little application that runs on your
laptop. Not related
laptop.
To the wireless router and the people on that particular one. It's actually affecting the whole internet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's one of the scourges of, unfortunately, the internet cafes, when people come in with plug their own laptops in and away they go.
Mm.
Now, in Britain... We had a couple of guys arrested for piggybacking on or using someone's Bluetooth.
Unlawfully. I read that. Yeah.
Now, what's going on? This is everyone sort of goes, oh, yeah, there's a free network, and you don't think twice about it. But in effect, you're actually stealing something that's somebody else's, whether you're doing it intentionally or not, because a lot of people do it unintentionally, I'd imagine, especially if you're walking around with one of the Skype phones that you had the other day. Oh, here's one. I'll use that.
Yeah, well, people see that as a phone. They wouldn't realise, would they?
No.
But I'll be in trouble next time I'm doing call testing for the network, because I've got the laptop out there and I'm actually testing the phone network. Nothing to do with, Wi-Fi networks, but because I'll have a laptop in the car, someone will be going, he's suspicious. He's stealing Wi-Fi. He's got Wi-Fi access and stealing internet bandwidth and things like that.
There's some very good friends of mine who work in law enforcement.
Mm-hmm. Hi, James.
And other people who listen to the podcast.
We're big in law enforcement. We've said that before on the show.
We are. There are a number of areas here where you could be getting yourself unstuck very fast. We often joke about, yep, you can use other people's wireless networks and things like that. At one end of the scale, you could be breaching their contract that person has with their ISP, which says that you won't resell or you won't let other people use this connection. At the really bad other end of the scale, you could be committing criminal offences.
Really?
Yeah. In Victoria... Theft. Well, it is. It's a type of theft, Andrew. The actual offence is called obtaining a financial advantage by deception. What you are doing is avoiding having to pay for a type of service by accessing, in this case, somebody's wireless network, without their knowledge... And you're not paying. You are avoiding having to pay an internet bill.
Mm-hmm.
And you're using somebody else's without them having any knowledge. You might be using up their bandwidth.
Could you argue that they're sending their bandwidth over your house, and they're using...
Yeah, like
your,
the tree scenario where the branches are hanging over the property, yeah.
That's right. And they're using frequencies that are for your use, you know.
You got to chop it off and throw it back over the fence, though. Like that, I don't know how you do that, but yeah.
We were having this argument at work, Mark, and somebody said, well, look, it's their problem. They haven't secured their network. Mm. They haven't gone out of their way to lock it down, so...
And they're broadcasting it out to your house, for example.
If I said to you, Mark, you walk out of your home tonight and you forget to lock the front door, you just pull it closed behind you.
Mm-hmm.
You come home tonight and you find your house has been burgled.
Yep.
And you've had things stolen from inside your house. Is that legally your fault because you haven't locked your front door, therefore it's okay for somebody to come in and steal things?
Yeah, I understand what you're getting at, but that's trespassing as well. They walked on your land. But I'm sitting in my house... And it's my airspace, and
technical.
You know what I mean? So they're transmitting into your domain, if you like. You know, you're not going into their property or...
Yeah, they're forcing their signal onto your property.
Exactly.
You could also say that I don't have a contract with Vodafone, but their signals are all floating around my head. I'm just going to start pirating SIM cards and using their network.
Well, then you pirated something in the first place.
Well,
it's not a free thing, you see. It's,
can I just say one thing? Anyway, this discussion would be really good in a court of law, so that you've got a judge to make a determination to say, yes, no, go away, don't bother me, sign of the times, deal with it.
Well, this is it, Andrew. You can see there's arguments on both sides where you could just get quite complex... cases, and people have to be aware that if you are sitting at the front of a business where you know that it has an open wireless network, you pull up in your car there in the middle of the night, you think, yeah, this is pretty good, this is a good lurk, I'll just stoke up my laptop in the car here, I'll log on, I'll just pull down a few movies, use 5, 6, 8, 10, 20 gigabytes of bandwidth, pull down some software, drive off after an hour, I think, yeah, that was good, that was a bit of
not
a bonus.
Not in this country you do that, not if you wanted a few movies.
But, yeah, the point I'm making is, look, you could be committing a criminal offence.
Mm.
So be very careful.
And you'll be arrested in the UK for it.
In the UK, people have been arrested for it, as we heard in the news.
All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. That's the end of the wireless dispute this evening. We'll take that to the Magistrates Court and we'll sort that out for you and report back next week. Coming up after the break, we're going to talk a little bit about AMD.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Subscribing to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is so easy. It's child's play.
Podcasting's so easy, even my little brother can do it.
Step one, visit the iTunes Music Store and search for Tech Talk Radio in the podcast section. Step two, click subscribe and you're done. Now every week you'll be able to listen to Tech Talk Radio whenever, wherever and however you like. You could be mowing the lawn, on a train, in a car, on a plane, at work,
poor car visiting is the relatives, hard washing the car. Crazy.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Thank you to all those people that emailed asking me what that little girl says in the back of the promo. That's my 5-year-old daughter doing some radio contributions. Finish your donut before you speak, Dr. Ron.
No one would have known unless you'd said that.
Exactly.
If you reckon you know what she says at the end of that promo, then email us and the best translation might get a coffee mug.
Oh, well, there you go. Okay. Translation's good, yes. You have to go back and listen to it on the podcast now.
Make up your own.
Mm. The Intel battle is hurting AMD, which is a bit of a spoonerism of what I teased coming into the promo because I was reading two things at once, and that's what happens. AMD, you know, the people that make the chipsets which compete directly with Intel. I've got one sitting here in the laptop on the desk in front of me. They've reported a greater than expected loss in their first quarter as the chip maker continued to struggle amid fierce price competition war with larger rival Intel. Now, AMD's always been traditionally cheaper, but I think traditionally they've had a better outlook on life in a lot of respects because they've built architecture which has been sort of scoped to expand and grow, whereas Intel have been like the old renovation after renovation. They have actually, you know, tacked bits on to their processors and things like that, from my understanding. So, but obviously they've been given a bit of a run for their money. Dr. Ron, are you an AMD or an Intel person, and why?
I'm an Intel boy.
Yep.
And the reason is, well, no other reason than the fact that I used to work for an Intel distributor.
Oh, okay. Legacy.
Legacy, and I've always used them. I've never had any problems with Intel chips. I've never had any problems with AMD either, for the few times I've used a machine with AMD chipsets. But I've always used the Intel Pentiums and Celeron series processors. And, yeah, that's the only reason is I used to work for an Intel distributor.
Mm. I was always Intel. And then friends started buying AMD, and they were telling me basically that it actually went a little bit faster.
And it was half the price or whatever.
And it was cheaper. And I thought, well, maybe I'll give it a go next time, you know. And read independent reviews in PC magazines and that sort of thing. It says the same thing. So I thought, oh, I'll give it a go, and been quite happy with it. But not that I was unhappy with the Intel, except Celeron, you know, probably better to go Pentium.
Yeah, nearly all my machines at home are AMD, I must admit. And I've got a couple of Intel ones because I think they just happened to be in the right place at the right time when I bought the processor or whatever. Dell did a backflip on Windows XP. Basically, when Vista came out, they said, no, we're going to roll out with Windows Vista. But they changed their mind the other day, and now it's all optional again. You can choose either Windows XP or Windows Vista. Does that surprise any of you guys?
Well, it was backed by popular demand, wasn't it?
It was
a vote on their website.
It was on website. Their website, yeah.
Now, 10,000 hits or something, wasn't it? 10,700 votes saying we want it back. I mean, you've got to listen to that, don't you? You know, and
well, not necessarily. You know? There's organisations that don't care. You know, if the whole world stands up and says no, they'll still go ahead and do it.
But well, that's forward thinking from Dell to listen to their customers who say they want the option.
Well, Dell's real main rival is Compaq, isn't it? Is that one of their main people that they have to listen to what their consumers
don't know? We should ask Graham this
Dell,
question.
Dell, IBM, Compaq, they're all in that high-end server space.
Yeah, the ones, yes, that's them. But I just thought that was rather interesting that obviously XP hasn't quite made the mark that a lot of people are expecting it to make.
Vista.
Sorry, you're right, Vista, yes. Sorry, I won't read the next segment as I go along.
Maybe
sorry,
people want a couple of the bugs fixed or something before they go there, and they're happy to take the XP knowing that they can upgrade in the future for little cost, and, you know, when it's all sorted out, I'll go there then. You know?
I think the downside of Vista is that there's a lot of plugins, drivers for your devices that just aren't there
yet. Aren't there yet, yeah. And which happens with all new software. It's nothing new, is it?
Yeah. Internode is an ISP here in Australia, based in Adelaide. They're aiming for 200,000 broadband connections by 2008. Now, that's a big gutsy call. But I must admit, I'm an Internode subscriber. I'm on their ADSL too, and it is very, very good. So they're also part of the rollout for the broadband guarantee, which is the federal government initiative, which sort of went from...
So what's their customer service like?
When I've rung them on the odd occasion, it's I've never had to hang on for any more than probably about 3 or 4 minutes or something like that.
Okay, pretty good. And charging and billing, never make a mistake? And
oh, no, they've made mistakes, but they've apologised. Okay. Rather than like what...
Rang you around and say it's not our fault.
Exactly. Rather than the big guys coming up and saying, oh, look, you know, we had a... well, hang on, where's the Optus thing? It was a... supplier,
was
a vendor issue, vendor, yeah, problem. Rather than that, they actually, it's like, that was one of the things that used to always annoy me with TPG as an ISP. Whenever they had an outage, it was third party problem, not ours. You can guarantee it on their, you know, their service page and things like that. But Internode, to their claim, when they have had issues, they certainly put their finger up and say, yep, sorry, that was us. And ANet's the same, I must admit. I use ANet. You do too, Dr. Ron.
I do.
They have a forum there, which is very informative and tells you all about problems. And you can actually talk through these forums to the guys that are actually at the coalface, you know, in the exchanges, changing boards and doing all that sort of stuff and saying, yeah, we've got these problems and this is why. And it certainly highlights a lot of consumer complaints where you can't talk to people behind the scenes to find out what's really going on. These guys are there. So here's to those internet service providers.
That, for Internode, sorry.
Internode, yeah, and ANet as well there we were talking about as well too. Mm-hmm. So
if you want to find out a little bit more about Internode in Australia or ANet or any of the other ISPs, there's a very good independent website where you can compare plans and service details, and that's Whirlpool, the Whirlpool forums.
Indeed.
Whirlpool.net.au.
That's where I go for all my information on the handsets too.
They've got
the forums there for information on what your phone can and can't do and how you fix problems. And
there's a lot of references back to Tech Talk Radio from there too, which is good. So please blog in the forum because it's good for us because it gives a link back. Put your links on there. Link to us, guys. Come on, lift.
Link farming, that's what it's all
link
about.
Link farming, yes. Exactly. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We'll be back and talking about Grey Pages after this.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
There's not that many applications out there that actually work in 64-bit domain.
They had some internal political wrangling, didn't they? And they sort of lost the plot there, and everything just passed
them
by.
Well, the first advice I'd give you, Andrew, is not to click on those websites asking about impotence and hair loss.
Why do you ask?
Oh, just, there might be people out there who got bluejacked by you.
Is that a personal question? How big is it?
It's one of those nights, isn't it?
It is. You started it.
I think
on air and on the internet, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
There's white pages. I've never seen any black pages, but there's grey pages, that transitional zone in between. Dr. Ron, you've come across these in your travels. I think we all have. They're in essence a reverse lookup of publicly accessible data, such as the phone book. Some of them go to some great detail to give you additional information, which a particular site does here in Australia. But they've been sort of gazumped. Telstra finally got to them. They've been told to shut down, and now all you get on this reverse lookup is just a fairly broad suburb arrangement of where these people are.
Exactly. This is an online telephone directory, yeah, which you can used to be able to search backwards. You could actually type in a phone number, and it would tell you the service address if it was listed in the white pages.
You could type in a street name, and it'd tell you all the people in that street.
All the people in that street. Yeah. So it was a telemarketer's dream.
Optus or something like that, wasn't it? Or yeah,
something.
Having
Optus
said
cable
that,
or something,
it did respect private phone numbers and things like that. To its credit,
it silent numbers. It almost did. It did, because it...
What? What problem?
Yeah, it used to use a number of different editions of the electronic white pages in the compilation. Yep. So it might have had a version from, say, 95, one from 99, one from 2002, one from 2004, for example, and it would compile all of the data. If you'd flagged your telephone number as being silent and it was actually listed prior to your flagging it as silent, then it would still show up.
Oh, okay. But don't you get a new number when you get a silent number?
No, not necessarily, mate. Oh, you can just flag a number as, I want this to be not listed anymore, and it's not listed as of the next directory.
And then they're not called silent these days. They're called unlisted, aren't they?
I think that's right, yeah. Mm.
And you pay for the privilege.
You do. It's another, $5 an account or $7.50 per account or something?
Yeah, because they can.
Hmm.
It's bizarre.
We change a software flag and we charge you a lot of money.
Oh, but it's like services and technology, those value-added things you get for the exchange. Some of them they give to you for a damn good reason, because it makes you spend money.
Because it's revenue-generating.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. And the others, which is a service to you, nah, you got
to
pay for it.
Revenue-neutral to the telcos, then you can pay for that.
Now, speaking of telcos, G9 made its fibre-to-the-node move, which is very funny. You probably all heard about it and read in the paper. I think we even talked about it in our news tonight. One of the things which really stands out, and I'm not going to labour the point, is the fact that they haven't told us what they're going to do. They said, here's our plan, we're going to submit it to the ACCC. And, yeah, what's in your plan?
What's Mr. Samuels said at the ACCC? Has he seen it yet?
I don't know. No, nothing in the press that I've sort of heard, reaction or anything like that, but, you know.
I think our minister for sitting on the fence has seen the plan.
Has she?
Wonder
what she thinks. She probably wouldn't understand.
She said, don't worry, it's not going to be all handed to Telstra. I'm talking to both of them at the moment, but can't say too much.
Senator the Honourable Helen Coonan?
That would be the one. Yeah, that's her name.
Do you reckon
name,
she'll have
it?
A job after? I'm actually at work. We're doing a whip around for Pete Costello, because we reckon he's going on holiday in November. It's called the Bass. But sorry, I joke there. It's that time of the year. Yeah, so that's the G9 sort of thing. Do you wonder whether Senator Helen Coonan is partial? I think it's becoming, and this is what we were talking about last week, it's really becoming a political hot potato at the moment, and we're going to suffer because it's going to be, someone's going to make a decision not based on all the facts, and we'll live to regret it.
Well, it's going to be a political decision, isn't it? Because the Labor Party sort of gazumped the government by announcing their plan first. And that's putting them in a tailspin, I think.
And then we've got the G11, which is T... Oh, look, all these acronyms, I'm getting confused these days. This is another group that came out to spin more spin, to confuse more consumers about what's going on with broadband. But they don't have Optus involved. And as Adam said last week, which is very true, Optus obviously knows something, which is why they didn't opt in. I liked his analogy, actually. It's not as if he didn't get the email, hey, guys, you're in.
Yeah.
It's been a choice. They've chosen not to get in for whatever reason. So
that's T4, which T4, is the spin site of G11. in competition
which is in competition to the spin site called Now We Are
Now
Talking,
which is the Telstra spin site. Yeah. Okay.
When are the ACCC going to bring one out?
I think I just went cross-eyed.
But imagine how the consumer feels. You know, we're sitting here going, yeah, and like, the poor consumers at the end
of
going,
what are
we talking
about? You
basically
have to read both of those sites to get some sort of idea of what's going on and then make your own mind up, don't you?
Something which resembles the truth will lie somewhere in between the two extremes.
There's a very interesting article.
Oh, there's lots of truths on both of them, but not all of them are being told on both sites.
Mm.
If that makes sense.
And they omit vital pieces of information.
I think that's the omission that's the problem
exactly.
on both sites. And
exactly.
If you read both of them, you'll get the idea of what's going on overall.
And boy, did the Now We Are Talking site get stuck into poor old Graham Samuel the other day. They said, it's time you got a new job, Graham.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a bit unfortunate.
It's a bit ruthless, really.
Yeah. Harsh.
I'm going to change the subject. Sharp is unveiling a tiny liquid crystal display that boasts four times better contrast than the best products commercially available today.
We've completely changed the subject.
Yes. The Japanese electronics maker will begin shipping the 2.2-inch displays very shortly, targeting nearly $850 million in sales next year. These are replacing the things in our mobile phones. Because apparently when the sun gets on them, they're a bit naff.
Mm.
You can't
quite see them.
So this is a new LCD display with really, really gutsy contrast.
Where you can receive digital television, just broadcast-type television on your mobile phone, and they need better quality screens to see it.
Exactly.
Gutsy contrast LCD. GC LCD.
Yeah.
Nice.
How's your organic LCDs? Your OLEDs coming
along? The OLEDs. Wasn't that interesting?
Are we talking about different technologies?
I think I was...
I was telling someone about that. I heard on a radio show.
Yeah, it was prattling on about it in the news last week, I think.
Yeah?
That was, fascinating technology. They've been talking about it for years, but they've actually put it into production.
This is Sony, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Was it Sony? Yeah, because this is the other thing. Sony have been not making plasma TVs for some time in lieu of this new technology, which they've finally brought out, really. About time, too. All this sort of new stuff. Stay with us, guys, because you'll learn all about it.
The OLED technology doesn't need to be backlit, and therefore it's very, very thin. The actual panels themselves physically...
But they're LEDs, aren't they? Light-emitting diodes like we have in our laptops and on our... Is that how it worked?
Yeah, exactly right. Very, very thin panels.
It'll be very interesting to see how well that integrates into existing technologies such as laptop screens, mobile phones...
Televisions,
yeah. Because if it's like that technology, LED, it'll glow. It's good stuff and fairly low-powered and doesn't generate much heat.
That's it.
Which has always been the tradition. Have you ever put your hand on a power supply of a laptop?
They warm up. Or a big LCD television, and you just hold your hand over the top of it after it's been on for half an hour.
Oh,
a lot of heat comes off them.
LCDs get warm as well. Is that the big backlight behind them,
Because
you've got to remember, those technologies... And there's a great article on the Tech Talk Radio website about LCDs and plasmas. It's highly searched too. People come to it from Google quite well. But if you didn't know, plasma is the gas which gets stimulated and glows, not unlike an electron hitting a phosphor on a TV screen. And LCD is the reflective technology. So there's like a fluoro on behind it and light reflects and they open and close little red, green and blue doors to actually show you the light. Mm. But this is new technology. The OLED, which is light emitting diode technology, like, you know those high intensity LEDs, those things that everyone's got nowadays. Yeah. As well as...
like the flashing thing on your phone?
Yep, all that sort of stuff. And now we've got new Super U-Butte contrast stuff coming out. So there's changing interfaces for us humans so we can deal with our technology on a daily basis. Now, we're in the downhill run of the show. We're going to come back in a moment with Odd Spot Gadget and Website of the Week.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Television coming to a lounge room near you.
Sounds like a political situation in a dictatorship, really, doesn't it? Everything's fine over here, but...
Can I answer anything else that you would need to know about technology?
I'm here for you.
It's a Garmin Forerunner.
Okay.
Really neat little unit.
That's gone from big pond to big quagmire.
Right in the thick of technology.
Yes. But I saw two policemen try and lasso it with their ties.
We've got great heads for radio in here.
On air and on the internet, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1-300-664-882 and leave a voice message. That's 1-300-664-882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Andrew, how hard is it to change the time delay for your screensaver on your computer? What, two mouse clicks, three mouse clicks?
Yeah, probably.
Right click.
Yeah, right click and you're there.
Properties.
Yeah, not too hard, yeah.
Unless you work for Telstra where it's been removed.
It's locked
well,
there.
Well, that's a point, isn't it?
Well, Mark, this gadget is for you, I'm here to say. Inarguably the dumbest gadget ever. For just $30, you too can own a USB mouse jiggler.
What?
This is a USB dongle.
We've had everything on the show tonight, haven't we? Drop your payload in your Wi-Fi cafe.
Do what you got to do. A USB dongle. And all it does is simply nudges your mouse pointer around the screen so your screensaver doesn't come on.
Oh, God.
Why would you bother going through 10 to 15 seconds of mouse clicks changing something when all you need to do is spend $30... on a USB device, which is Windows and Mac OS compliant, and there are two versions, slow jiggle and fast jiggle.
Why don't you just get a mouse and plug it in a USB port? What's the difference?
No, this jiggles the pointer around in software on your screen.
So
the screensaver never comes on.
Okay.
Oh, fantastic. So we can get around the Telstra issue of after 10 minutes, no option, but you must come up with a Telstra-approved screensaver.
You need a USB mouse jiggler.
I do.
Get all over it, Mark. There you go. Specify slow jiggle or fast jiggle. Please specify when ordering. That's the TikTok radio.
Hang on. How much did you say they were?
Dumbest gadget of the week. $30.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
This is my turn this time. The Tech Talk Radio website of the week is a very popular website. It's adobe.com. And the reason why is they've just released their brand new suites of Photoshop and the likes.
Oh.
So if you're a Photoshop guru, which I think everybody in the sun has heard of, under the sun has heard of Photoshop, but and a lot of people use it, and I use it professionally. You can go and see the new range of software that they've got available. You can download and pay for it online.
Only be, a couple of $100, something like that?
And the rest. This is one of the talking points these days, and I think a lot of it's come down to piracy, because this is a typical example where you're starting to see piracy, or the cost of piracy being loaded up into the retail price of things, unfortunately, because it's probably, in fact, it is the world's most popular pirated software is Adobe Photoshop. So you watch, there'll be hot copies out there next, left, right and centre before you know
several
it.
Several thousands of dollars for a legitimate version, I think, isn't it?
Well, I think if you just buy Photoshop alone, it's about $1,800 Australian, which is still a lot of money to buy for some software. But at the end of the day, you go and buy a suite. They've packaged them up into four different types of suites. The three that come to mind, there's one for web, there's one for printing, there's one for desktop publishing. There is another one, but I can't remember what it was for. And those suites, which come with a couple of, you know, like programs built in you, so you get, you know, a swag of programs for that application, like Acrobat and the likes. They're up around the, you know, $3,000 to $4,000 mark. So
it's a lot of money. Big investment in software, isn't it?
A lot of money. Do you use Photoshop at all, Dr. Ron?
I do, for web page development.
Yeah, and Dreamweaver, because Dreamweaver was bought out. That originally was Macromedia, but now it's gone across to Adobe. So that's all in all a new suite as well.
I do use Dreamweaver.
So there you go. The Tech Talk Radio website of the week is the new Adobe.com range of products available from Adobe.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Showtime. Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Pakistani mobile phone service providers have been inundated by calls from users worried by a prank message that they could die of a deadly virus being transmitted via their telephones. This rumour was so effective that some mosques made announcements that people were being killed by a mobile virus and they should be aware of God's wrath.
We're all speechless over this.
I've got words in front of me and I'm speechless. The prankster warned users that a deadly virus transmitted through phones had already killed 20 people. There are more than 52 million mobile phone users in Pakistan. A spokesman for Warid Telecom said that their customer service centres had been inundated with panicky subscribers inquiring about the so-called virus, worried that if they answered the phone, if it rang, they were going to die.
As he throws the piece of paper down on the table in disgust.
I'm still trying to get over the
the mouse jiggler or upper.
Reminds me of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where the planet was wiped out by a phone, you know, sanitizer didn't clean the phone or something.
Yeah, public telephone sanitizers.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio. Come visit us on our website, techtalkradio.com.au. Please subscribe to our podcast. Subscribe to Adam's new podcast, From the Lounge. Live from the Lounge. I can't remember what. Couch. That's the one. Yes. It's getting late.
Lounging on the couch.
That's right. So until next week on Tech Talk Radio, it's bye from all of us. And may your technology be good technology. And don't go to those websites that Dr. Ron goes to. Bye for now.
Tech Talk Radio is brought to you each and every week by a band of dedicated professionals from within the broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer and host Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Sir Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Production facilities are courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night from 8 p.m. The producers wish to thank all the stations that are taking the show, including 3WBC, 3XX, Cairns FM and 4KZ. For syndication, sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit the website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.